Yes, it'll be 20 seconds from now then. Good.
Hello, WHO. This is Herb Plambeck, your war correspondent, bringing you another broadcast from Europe. In this program, I want to deal with food, and certainly we'll not have to take much time emphasizing its importance to our fighting men. After some 5 weeks of eating army chow, including some of the much-discussed C and K rations, and some of the rations serve the boys up front, I can say I've been pleasantly surprised with the meals all the way through. And just like the GIs, I love to eat. Best way to tell the story of food for the armies, food you farmers and truck gardeners back home have provided so generously, and I'm sure will continue to produce whatever our boys need, is to have the words of the men themselves. A Waterloo, Iowa soldier, Private First Class Leroy Conry, who has been overseas 20 months, who is with the 9th Air Forces, and has been stationed in England and Scotland as well as France, says, "Our food is very good." From a Fairfield man, Corporal Glenn Spray, with 3 years of service, comes the comment that the food is not only good, but that the variety is gratifying. Spray has been serving in Germany of late, says he's also one of the millions who loves to eat, and since he goes for vegetables pretty heavy, he is glad that peas, corn, and the like are produced in Iowa, where, as he says, all the best comes from. He adds that even up front, they have gotten 3 hot meals a day. Then there's Private First Class Louis DeMars of Clinton, just in from the lines when I saw him, and who vividly remembers the push to Cologne, saying, "Food, oh, it's very good, and fine quality, well prepared." He says, too, there's hot meals up front, and that they're a godsend. "We all go for sweet corn, canned fruits, and peas," DeMars added, and said, "We can sure say that chow is good." A Fort Dodge soldier, Sergeant Dino Castagnoli, who is now fighting in the Battle of the Pockets in western France, and who knew food from a grocery man standpoint before the war, is cooking for his buddies now. Incidentally, he reports, "Cooks dig foxholes near their mess halls too, and have been known to dive into them fast." Castagnoli was delighted to see a WHO man, and was very emphatic that the food he has to work with is of fine quality, and the boys really eat it up. Don Thompson of Ogden, Minnesota, where his wife and small daughters live, is a mess sergeant up with a line company in Germany. He's happy a lot of good Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri products are always on hand. He showed me some meats from Austin, told of turkeys from Mankato, butter from northern Iowa, and vegetables in big cans from all over the tall corn state. I've also seen many other familiar names and addresses on canned and other food products here. Marshalltown, Vinton, Ogden, Storm Lake, Grundy Center, Ottumwa, Waterloo, Des Moines, Roland, and I could go on and on. With us here in the studio is a young Iowan, Private First Class Henry Coates, who was born at Denver and who worked at Davenport, Webster City, and Waterloo before the war. He's been in service 2 years. Henry, how does the food you get here compare to what was served you in training in the States?
Very favorably.
You did some baking before the war and have done cooking and baking in service. Do you see familiar addresses on some of the products here, too?
Oh, yes, all the time, especially on sweet corn, meats, and tomatoes.
Good. What's your feeling about the quality?
Good food and plenty of it. Means better work with our planes on the ground and in the air, just as it means more achievement up on the front lines.
You said plenty of it. What did you mean?
It's important it keeps coming. But if Hitler could get German farmers to produce as he did, I know our American farmers won't let us down.
We know they won't let you down, Private First Class Henry Coates. And now to another Iowan, a charming young lady from Des Moines, First Lieutenant Adele Moll, whose parents are probably tuned in at this very moment and who has had a splendid opportunity to observe the food our Midwestern farmers produce from still another angle. Lieutenant Moll is a dietitian with the Quartermaster Corps, the branch of the Army responsible for feeding our men and women in service. Lieutenant, what is your particular assignment?
My work is in the laboratory and menu branch. We prepare the menus for the troops in the European Theater of Operations.
That's what I call a real responsibility. And if I may, I'd like to add, as one who has partaken quite a lot of the meals prepared from your menus, they're just grand. What's more, as the men whom we've referred to have already stated, the food that is served, even the boys up front, is very satisfying. How do you, as a dietitian, look on the job our farmers face, the job of producing the food for victory?
Naturally, the past record of the folks who produce the food speaks for itself. I join with all the others who express gratitude for the way our men have been adequately provided for in that respect. As a dietitian, I know the men are receiving well-balanced meals. And that, of course, calls for a lot of products raised in Iowa and neighboring states. The meat, the dairy foods, and the vegetables. Peas, tomatoes, sweet corn, and the other canned goods we get here.
Thank you, Lieutenant Moll. It's been splendid of you and the others from home to join us on this program. I'm sure our farmers and gardeners will keep on producing the food so vital to victory and in the months to follow, over here and in the other theaters of this war. This is Herb Planbeck, your war correspondent, returning you to WHO. Hello, WHO. This is your war correspondent, Herb Planbeck, broadcasting again from Paris. In this report, I'm going to tell you about Pierre and John and Margaret, three little French youngsters I have learned to know. Their mother works in a hotel where I stay when in Paris. Their father is a laboring man in the French capital. Both of the parents work hard, but the pay is small. So the family lives in a poor section, not very distant from the fabulous Place Vendôme, but under conditions far removed from the gay Paris many of us think of. I visited the French working family's home, talked with the youngsters and the parents, saw how little they had to eat, felt the cold in their rooms, noted the made-over clothes, and the experience was one of the most sobering I've ever had. On a narrow, dark street with no garden and no place to play, the family lives in an old flat, very uninviting doorway, and a dark, badly worn stairs leading to their third-story rooms, including a tiny kitchen, a small, windowless bedroom for the parents, and a larger room which serves as living quarters during the day, and a sleeping room for the children at night. This room has two windows, and although carpetless, has several pictures, a clock that came as a wedding gift, Pierre's little sailboat, Margaret's doll things, and John's wooden soldiers. There's also the sewing machine, much used now, an old table and chairs, a cupboard with family heirlooms and dishes, and a tiny stove in which scraps of wood were used during the winter to take away some of the gnawing cold. Pierre is about 12, but so small he could easily pass for 8, and very thin. Like his brother and sister, and like millions of other French youngsters, he has been sadly undernourished. When the Nazis were here for 4 long years, he never knew the taste of chocolate or an orange and other foods our youngsters have almost daily. Now the black market in France is denying children many necessary foods. I asked what he would have for supper and learned it would be warm butter soup, potatoes and bread, without butter, of course.
You should have seen his eyes sparkle when I gave him and his sister a couple of American-made candy bars out of my rations. He was so grateful, as was his brother for the chewing gum, his dad for the cigarettes, and his mother for the facial soap. I wondered about the supplies on the shelves. There was very little to be found. A sack of potatoes, a head of cauliflower, 2 bags of sucrose, a couple of loaves of bread. They were about 2 feet long and some 3 inches through, and are considered quite wholesome. There was no meat, and there were precious few jars of fruits and vegetables compared to our own well-stocked shelves and lockers at home. A pint or so of dirty lard was there to provide fats for the children's food. This, the mother told me, had to be bought on the black market for 100 francs, $2 in our money. In reply to my question, I learned the black market seems to exist everywhere, and people have to patronize it to live. With money, you can do anything, the lady told me. Without it, we must starve. She said butter cost as much as $15 a pound that way, milk 50 francs a liter, eggs up to 60 cents a piece in our money. Fortunately, the government provides some milk for the children, a quarter so a week, I'm told, and sees to it that the bread prices are reasonable. Otherwise, as near as I can see, conditions among working people in the cities here, bad enough because of coal and housing shortages, are made almost unbearable by the few greedy racketeers. But while Margaret, John, and Pierre have it hard compared to our standards, I was in other homes infinitely worse off. One family with 3 tiny children, the baby just a month old, lived in a single room in an old dark fire trap of a hotel. There they lived, cooked, washed, hung their clothes, slept. There was no place for the children to play and nothing to play with. Virtually no food. The little girls were so shy and so good, but their baby sister is far underweight, and though their parents try their utmost, little Nicoletta and the others have a dismal future. It was frightening to me just to see them in their unspeakable poverty. I know we have poor people and unsatisfactory conditions in parts of America, but not like this. And I'm told there are millions in Europe like them. Fortunately, it's some better now. The hated enemy is gone, and warm spring sunshine makes a world of difference. But again, just to see these people, to see their profound gratitude when I gave the little girls the rest of my candy and their parents other things, is enough to make for serious thoughts. Certainly, this war is leaving many unanswered problems. Some tremendous readjustments must be made very soon. And we in America, especially those of us in the Corn Belt, ought to be more grateful than we are for clean, bright homes, for the chance to breathe fresh air, for lawns and parks and playgrounds and fields and flowers and woods, for everything in the heaven-blessed land you and I call home. This is Herb Plambeck returning you to WHO.
Hello, NBC.
Chief to NBC.
Hello, Chief.
How did that come through?
My name is very good.
Oh, fine. I'm glad to hear that, and you'll take care of it on my end then.